following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
Welcome to The Leftovers, brought to you by the Underdog Sports Network, with Josh Dunn, Anshu Khanna, and Dan Bauer.
Welcome to episode 2 of The Leftovers, take 2. Sorry for getting this to you guys a little late on a Friday. We had some technical difficulties last night. We do not have Josh today, unfortunately. Anshu, you think we can pick up the slack?
We'll try. Lord only knows we badly need him, but we'll make it work.
All right, well, let's get going then. We have a little bit amount of time. As we said before, we try to get you bite-sized segments, something you can listen to while you're at lunch on your commute. So hopefully we have something for you guys to listen to on your way to happy hour today. So big news in baseball, Manny Machado, he may be on the move. Anshu, do you think he goes to the White Sox or do you think he goes somewhere else?
There's a chance they just keep him. I mean, Peter Angelos, their owner, is super unpredictable. But one thing that everyone seems to agree on is that he is not going to let Machado go to the Yankees. So any deal with the White Sox or anybody else will likely be attached to the contingency that they do not trade him to the Yankees, which is, you know, a little unconventional. But I completely believe that he's that petty to do something like that. The other thought of this is, you know, the Orioles are in an interesting spot because they have Britton and Brock and, you know, they've got Gausman and Bundy and Scope. And so they're kind of in the same spot the White Sox were in a year ago, where if they decide to completely fire sale this thing, they could, you know, get a lot of prospects. The difference is that Machado's only got that 1 year left. So for a team like the White Sox to deal for him, it seems like you're dealing for the opportunity to negotiate with him over the course of the year, because allegedly the Orioles won't allow the 72-hour negotiating window like the Stanton was granted by the Marlins. So that's interesting. I do think he'll end up getting moved. I think the Cardinals make a lot of sense, and in that case, you know, they become a real threat to the Cubs in the NL Central and the Brewers as well. So I think that ultimately Machado gets moved. The White Sox thing just doesn't make a ton of sense to me, though, because of the one-year issue.
You mentioned the Cardinals there real quick. They made a lot of moves so far this offseason. What are your realistic predictions for them next year?
I think they are in a great spot to win that division, honestly. I mean, the Cubs need to make another move for a pitcher. If they don't do that, it's very close. Marcelo Zuna is a super underrated pickup. And I mean, I think everyone knows he's a good bat, but this guy's young and just entering his prime. I think that, you know, he's actually got a Machado-esque bat. If you look at their numbers from last year, they're better for Ozuna. So, and he's under control for several years. That outfield with Tommy Pham, who broke out, and Dexter Fowler, and now Ozuna, is as good as any in baseball, especially offensively. So actually on both sides. So they've got a lot of good sticks. They need to figure out their pitching. Hopefully the injured pitcher comes back for them. Alex Reyes. But they're pretty good. I think the Cardinals have a real shot next year in the Central.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that division is going to be one of the most interesting in baseball. I think that we will be looking towards that race as, you know, potentially one or two wild card teams from that division end up making it. So it should be an interesting next year.
Don't forget about the Brewers either, man. Like, they're looking to make deals. They came a year early last year, maybe 2 years early, and now they're in a very interesting spot to potentially break through.
Yeah. If you had to pick right now who wins the NL Central next year, who is it?
I think you still got to go with the Cubs just because of the raw talent and the fact that their front office is likely to figure something out there and pick someone up in their rotation. But, you know, at this exact moment, I'd probably say the Cardinals, but the Cubs will end up better.
Well, it may be a fantasy that the Cardinals win the Central. But speaking of fantasy news, did you see the latest with Shohei Ohtani?
What about him?
So Chris Horwedel and I actually talked about this in the Underdog podcast months ago when his name first started coming up as him heading over to the U.S. Is in the fantasy baseball world, does he play as a pitcher or a hitter? Because you can only pick him as one, and Yahoo has finally figured out, they announced yesterday what they're going to do. And so he will actually be two separate people. So it really will be fantasy baseball. You will have pitcher Shohei Ohtani and hitter Shohei Ohtani. So our fantasy baseball draft next year, Anshu, do you take him as a hitter or a pitcher first?
You know, I think you got to take him as a hitter just because of the injuries. The UCL issue that we talked about on the first show is a factor, and I think that will play a heavy role in how the Angels utilize him this year and going forward. But if you had said the injury wasn't a factor, then I think you got to go with him as a pitcher because if he's pitching once every 5 days, that means he's going to be hitting probably three times every 5 days, and that's not a guy that you can really utilize in fantasy. I mean, three, as you know, I think you had Kyle Schwarber for the majority of last year, and having a guy who hits only three of every 5 days is a real disaster, much like your entire team, if I remember correctly. So it's I wouldn't really be super excited about him as a hitter. I mean, he's exciting, obviously, but it's a tough move to make to have him as strictly a hitter.
Right, and I think as we get more information on the severity of the UCL injury, that may come into a little bit better of a picture.
True.
Obviously, they announced it's the lowest grade possible, but who knows what happens over the course of an off season, whether further tests reveal some other damage, whether they decide, hey, we don't want to let this guy keep pitching because that UCL injury is going to eventually turn into needing Tommy John. And then, not only is he not a pitcher for you, he's not a hitter for you. So, who knows
what
the Angels do. They may shut him down. It would be interesting to see. What's more likely, you think, next year? He's a starting pitcher, strictly a position player, or do you think the Angels will really let him do both?
I think he starts as a position player more so. But they, it's an AL team. The Angels made some nice pickups. They picked up Ian Kinsler as well. So I think that, if you're the Angels, you just don't want to risk this asset for, it's a two-year deal. You don't want to risk him for 2019. I think by the end of the year, you see him being used as both, and they start thinking about that a little bit more, particularly if they're not in the playoff race or, even if they are, maybe they just kind of like run him out in little short spurts to see what they've got. But to me, I think you got to use him. You got to think about him as a hitter. That's my guess, but I have absolutely no idea on that one.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see for sure. We'll probably talk about this from now until baseball season. Those dog days of March when you're just waiting for something to happen. I'm sure we'll be talking about this a lot.
Really interesting.
Yeah, you did mention playoffs though. As I'm looking at snow coming down here in Cleveland, Ohio, football playoff weather coming. So, Anshu,
not for the Browns, but
that is a ice age away for sure. I think that's our best bet to making the playoffs is we need an ice age that just eliminates the sport of football and we start over. But if you had to pick right now, who do you think are our 12 NFL playoff teams?
Oh wow! Okay, so. Let's see, I've got the ESPN playoff machine up, so I picked all the games for the last 3 weeks, and this is what spit out. Yeah,
that's research, right?
Yeah, there you go. That's a little groundwork. Try to keep up, Dan. Yeah, so number one is New England. I've got New England beating Pittsburgh this weekend. This game is basically like a showdown for who would get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, which is huge. And I've got New England going into Pittsburgh and winning this week. I just feel like with Gronk back and the way that they were embarrassed last Monday night in front of the country against Miami, I think they come back and they win that game. I've got Pittsburgh as the two, so both those teams are 13-3. Jacksonville, the three seed at 12-4. Unbelievable. The four seed, I've actually got Kansas City. They play the Chargers this week, and that seems like it's going to be like the de facto AFC West title game. So that's what I've got. I've got Kansas City. They've got some home games left, and that's the big difference. I've got the wild cards then. I've got Baltimore at 10-6. They've looked good. Defensively, they're just so good, even without Jimmy Smith. And then the sixth seed, here's my big surprise. I've got the Bills cracking the playoff hunt at 9-7. They've got a really manageable slate left. They play Miami at home this week. Then they've got... I think they play at New England, which is definitely a loss, but then they finish with Miami at Miami again. So, you know, they win two of those three. They're at 9-7. They're looking pretty good for a playoff spot because they have the tiebreaker over the Chargers. So what do you think of that? What do you think of all that?
I think allowing a night to sleep on it probably did good for you because last night, like you said, you did have the Chargers as your last playoff spot. I think Buffalo is an interesting pick. I think the Chargers are probably the better team, but I don't hate that pick. You know, like you said, if you're sitting there going with remaining schedule, you know, hard to argue with that. And if they have winnable games coming up, and how awesome would it be to get Bills Mafia back in a playoff? I cannot wait. I'm gonna start. What company is gonna buy stock in for tables?
Oh my god!
Home Depot or.
Well, it would be so, and then that game, that's the Saturday during the day special during my wedding. It would be Buffalo at Jacksonville.
Humble brag. Well, Auntie's got to be married.
Yeah, big time brag. Yeah. But yeah, Buffalo at Jacksonville during the day, that's a classic. Put that in that first slot on Wildcard Saturday and see what happens.
If you had that as like a 1 o'clock afternoon game on CBS, it would get the lowest ratings.
Oh my possible. God! Yeah.
And that's going to be your playoff game.
Yep, exactly.
Well, so how about we go to the NFC? Oh, good timing on that.
Let's go nice work. Yeah. So I've got Philly as the one seed, even without Carson Wentz. I think that their slate is just manageable enough. They're already 11-2. I've got them going 2-1 down the stretch and being able to squeak through with it. They get the Giants this weekend. What a boon schedule wise for that. And then, so I think they'll go 13-3. I think they make the playoffs as a one seed. And then you got the two seed. I know you like them, the Vikings at 12-4. What do you think about those two teams?
I think the Vikings are going to win the NFC. So I, as we talked about a little bit on version one of episode two, I think I think they're the best team in the NFC. So I love that pick. So who do you got? 3, 4, 5, 6.
That's amazing. So we got Foles and Keenum as our two bye teams in the NFC. Quarterback. So then at three, I've got the team I think is the favorite in the NFC to me right now, and that's New Orleans at 12-4, getting a home game here. That would be a huge win for them. I've got them winning the South, which has been hotly contested. My four seed, I've got the Rams at 11-5. God, this is a murderer's row. When you think of these four teams, these four offenses, I know Wentz is out, so that's tough, but boy, those are four pretty good teams. And what a jump for the Rams. And then the five seed, I've got the Falcons. They've done enough. I got them at 10-6. I think they're not the Falcons of last year, but they're still definitely a dangerous team. You see them going into Los Angeles, and that would be a hell of a game. And the six seed, turn on that zero bias segment. I got the Packers running the table and grabbing the six seed over Seattle.
Just such a homer pick. I'm literally speechless on that. So what's your realistic predictions for those people who don't know? What's the update with Rodgers real quick, and what do you expect from him over these next couple of days?
So they play at Carolina, then they get Minnesota at home, and then at Detroit. So those three games are certainly a murderer's row. I mean, three playoff potential teams, and yeah, I mean, no guarantee for sure, but I do think that they'll be able to do this. And, you know, I have all the faith in the world in numero 12. So I just think that if they win those three, they still need help. That's the thing. But yeah. I do think they're going to pull it off.
Yeah, I think I'm going to disagree with you on that and think your homer pick is getting a little in the way on unrealistic.
Which one do you think is the most dangerous? Is it this week?
So what was the three again? So Carolina, Minnesota, Detroit?
Detroit, yeah. The first and third are road games.
So I would probably say, you know, this is going back to what I talked about earlier. I would put it in order of Minnesota's your toughest one, even though it's at home. Carolina away, number two. And then Detroit as your third toughest game. I think at that point, especially if Detroit has nothing left to play for at that point, you know, I think you get a win there. So those would be my order of how those go.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. I think that they're all tough, honestly, but right. I believe.
As you should, as any good fan should. So we got about 3 or 4 minutes left here in the show, and then we're going to have to get going today. But we're going to go to our segment, and we introduced this on our first episode, obviously where you introduce every segment. So this is called our Oh, By the Way, where we give something for you guys to either look for in the upcoming couple of days or something we noticed, stuff that's not necessarily maybe hard-hitting scores or news or injury updates, but just something kind of fun to talk about. You know, hey, did you see this? Oh, by the way. So, Anshu, do you have a good oh, by the way, something you want to talk about?
So, John Dorsey, yesterday or maybe 2 days ago now, had his introductory presser as the GM of the Browns, and he went out of his way to say that Sashi Brown, his predecessor, didn't draft football players. Was that the correct verbiage of how he said it?
Quote, not real players.
Not real players.
Not real players. They're ghosts. Somebody get the kid in the sixth sense out here and try to find our team, because no one knows. They can't see him. Not real players. Okay. How much does that have to hurt if you're in that locker room? I mean, you know, talk about tension between a front office and a head coach. How about tension between a front office and the players? I mean, what could he possibly have been thinking to say that?
Dude, I mean, it's a terrible look, honestly, because, like, dude, this is your first intro, and the optics of that first, you know, trying to win that first presser are so important, especially for a guy who was pushed out of town in Kansas City, despite doing a pretty good job of accumulating good talent. You know, it's just a terrible look, and I mean, I hate it, and I disagree with him. I mean, I think that they've done a great job of, I thought Sashi Brown did a great job of accumulating both future assets and current ones. I mean, you look at that roster and you look at Gordon, and I know he didn't grab Gordon, but Coleman and Garrett and Peppers and Njoku, and, you know, they've got a bright future there, I think. I mean, anyone with a brain would see that team and know that they did a great job in free agency too. And that Osweiler deal was really creative and impressive. I just think that, like, fine, you fire Sashi Brown, you fire Sashi Brown, but, like, you know, it's to say that he did a bad job is just awful, and I think Dorsey's going to end up getting a lot of credit, but potentially undeserved credit, because Sashi Brown's laid the foundation for a really impressive thing there. So, as a Cleveland fan, what are your thoughts on that whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely that I would have given Sashi one more year. I don't think that he's going to get enough credit for where this team is and what it's going to be in a couple of years. He's absolutely given us some real value players. I mean, if you think of Ogunjobi, I mean, Peppers looks good. You know, even this, you know, David Njoku's starting to come into his own. I mean, these are all very value picks that people question, but I think 2 or 3 years down the road are potential Pro Bowl players. Joe Schobert's another one that I know he's kind of a contentious, like, you know, person of some people really like him and some people don't, but at least, you know, whether you subscribe to PFF rankings or not, has been killing it.
He's awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
and a Wisconsin guy.
Kirksey, Kirksey, Collins. I mean, there's, you know, obviously Josh Gordon. I mean, there's playmakers on this team. So I completely disagree, and I think it was a bad look. But, you know, speaking of front offices who actually do deserve some credit, my oh, by the way, for the day, did you see this, Anshu, the Cardinals outfielder Stephen Piscotty, where he's headed to and why?
I did. I saw that he gets traded home, basically, to Oakland, and I saw that GM John Mozeliak of the Cardinals had gone out of his way to try to get him back there because his mom is suffering from, is it ALS?
Correct, yeah. She suffered from ALS, and there was a couple offers on the table for the Cardinals, and they, you know, Mozeliak's comment was essentially, when you have essentially a tie in terms of what offers you're getting, you go with, you know, being the good person to your team, to your players. And so they had an offer from the A's for a couple really top prospects, and so took that, and Piscotty's headed back home to be close to his mom as she battles with ALS. So great story, something we wanted to leave you with on a Friday, a feel-good note for the weekend. So keep that in mind that, you know, guys, there are still some good people in the world.
there is the world of sports.
Yeah. So we'll let you go in here in a second. We just want to say thank you guys for listening.
I have one more. I know I kind of spoiled it last time, but I did want to say one more feel-good story. It is Dan Bauer's birthday yesterday now. So just wanted to give you a big B-Day shout-out here on the show. And if anybody wants to leave a polite or embarrassing message in the comments, feel free.
Much appreciated, Archie. Thank you very much. And this has been episode 2 of The Leftovers. Anshu and I thank you for listening. Josh will hopefully be back to record with us Sunday night, so we'll have that ideally in your podcast by Monday morning for that Monday morning commute. Hopefully make you laugh on the way to work. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it.